Quick Skinner, my name is Alexandre Nicuado. I'm here with my colleague André Dusdomaine, and this week we have our guest is Ange Luft. So Ange, if you can introduce yourself.
Hi guys, my name is Ange Luft. I am from Ganawage, so Ganawage, Nidwagano. I am living in Toronto, so Jita Toronto, Ganagare. I'm Bear Clan, Kori Niwagi Toronto. I've been in Toronto since about 2008. And I work in theater and multidisciplinary.
How do you, I think you fell in the field of arts pretty young. Can you give us a glimpse of the starting of your engagement in arts? Your early engagement in arts younger years in Ganawage.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, that's where it starts. So definitely, I was part of like a community theater in Ganawage called Turtle Island Theater Company since I was a child, I guess, since I was 10 years old at least. And yeah, worked there for a long time and spent a lot of my time, like formative years, developing my craft, kind of getting into my way of sewing, my way of working with reused materials. Yeah, it's been a good place to pick up a lot of skills, but they're back in action these days, so that's exciting.
Then you study in art when you went to the college or university, I suppose?
Yeah, it took a long time to get there. I didn't think I was going to do theater professionally because it didn't really seem feasible. So I was moving into, I thought, politics or into sociology or anthropology for a while, and then decided to jump ship. I went to Concordia for theater. So I did the full 3-year program there and graduated there. But yeah, it was a long kind of trip to doing my own creative process because I ended up having to go to Center for Indigenous Theater afterward in Toronto to actually learn how to make my own work. So I did like 6 years back-to-back, more or less, of theater school, interrupted by a short stint at Turtle Island Theater Company. But yeah, I spent a long time in school. And the second school was really great for, you know, trying to pick up skills from other Native people that work, across the whole area.
Also, that's where you learn, I suppose, to jump over the borders or frontiers, because when I look at your work, it's always multidisciplinary, and you cannot just pin it in classical hallway. This is always a lot of connections coming together.
Yeah, it's hard because I introduce myself still as a theater artist, but like I rarely do anything on stages. I spend more time researching. I spend more time, like these days I'm sewing, I'm making puppets for a play that like for an outdoor parade that's happening in Toronto, a turtle parade. So yeah, I'm in the closet right now, a place in High Park in Toronto. And I'm like sewing all day because I'm making some puppets. But yeah, it's been my career is all over the place these days. I'm like curating for Street Art Toronto right now, like curating a mural. Yeah, so it's a nice collection of weird little gigs I have right now. And I think like I'm an artist in residence. I'm a professional artist in residence these days more than an actual theater person. But the goal is always to, you know, get back to theater.
Well, one of your performative involvement on stage was with, and I was surprised, I just discovered it recently. You work with a group called Yamantaka Sonic Titan. Wow. And I listened to it. Wow. But it's interesting because this is a very good rock and roll band. I think all female artists in it. And most of them are from an Asian background. And then all of a sudden, you are part of this group. Can you speak about it a little?
That project it's been around for a long time. So That project started in probably 2006, 2007 at Concordia with the drummer was Alaska B. She's the composer and she was my partner for a really long time. So I was part of the band as originally just doing some costumes and stage management kind of thing, because I was into enough of that kind of work. But like, I was raised in musical theater. I can carry a tune. I can carry a beat. So I kind of fell into place there because, yeah, I just wanted some kind of like, it's nice to do a bit of an experimental act sometimes. And that was surprising though, because like the work that we did turned into an album really quickly. And then the album gained a lot of momentum. The first album, YTST, it brought us out to the UK. We played at like really big festivals for a little while. We traveled around and actually became kind of like a real band, even though it was kind of an art experiment first. It was more of like a performance art experiment with sets and things first. But yeah, I got into it through theater and then ended up kind of being, yeah, we recorded three albums. We've worked on music and video game soundtracks. We've done a lot of like, now I'm moving into and have been doing a little bit of explorations with like scoring films in collaboration with Alaska B for the past few years. And so it's been an interesting vehicle. We just got funding, so who knows, it might be another album sometime. Yeah, I thought it was over, but it's not ending.
Well, happily, there is a lot of videos and song we can listen to on the web. And I encourage those who are listening to us now to connect with Yamantaka Sonic Theta and see all this creative work. That's fantastic. And yeah, those nice videos often inspired by the MAGA visual aesthetic. And wow, that's really, really beautiful. And the music and the songs also are fantastic. So
yeah, I spent a lot of time in that project, like for this music video you're looking at right now, like doing the design work for it, spending a lot of time doing some of the costume, general aesthetic kind of game we've been playing for a lot of years. Setting up, I'm like, I bring all the lights, I bring the whole show. So I bring the theater to the band. It's been like that for a long time.
Wow. That's really, we could have a podcast just on this part of your work because it's so beautiful and important in my own eyes.
Yeah, but, it was great because it was a nice chance for me to be able to get out and travel. And so I got to see, we went around the States on tours with multiple bands over the years, like all the way down through LA, down through come around through all the coast and stuff. We did a lot of internal tours and then we've got to go to Europe and go all around for a few tours now. So it's a nice, really nice way to get out there and see the world.
Of course. And I suppose the group is still active now?
It's like somewhat active. We have some funding possibles coming up soon. So we're trying to record something eventually. It's going to happen. Yeah.
Okay. So if there is other festival directors like me, we can take note that the group could be available for a performance. They are another.
We never did native festivals. Like the first native festival we never done was the film festival in Ottawa. But we never did native film festivals or native festivals because like I'm the only native person in the band. And one time there was a little while where there were two native people in the band. But because like I just never, we never do it that. We never kind of promote ourselves through any native routes that's why I kind of like have a different, like a secret career.
But right now with the difficult situation of all festivals in Canada, there is a lot of connection between all kinds of festivals to see how we can get our events back on a good track. So I suppose some of them are now listening to this podcast. So it could be an indigenous festival, but also any other event, a cultural or artistic event that would be interested with the work of the band. But you are also associated with, in Toronto, with theater troupe called Jumblies, if I pronounce well, Jumblies Theater and Arts. Can you speak about how you connected first with this group and what happens and what has been created since that time?
Yeah, when I was kind of coming out of Center for Indigenous Theater, I started working on some oral history projects, initiating some work, gathering interviews. And then at the same time, this company that was just starting up that I learned about, Jumblies Theater, they'd already been around for a while, but they just moved downtown. They were doing these oral history workshops. So I got involved that way and then really started working with them pretty consistently over the past few years. I did a little stint there as associate artistic director for a long time and produced this huge project. So they're like a community art center, has workshops. We have, like, for a long time, they had, you know, programming for all different kinds of things, choirs. So I really cut my teeth like trying to learn how to do this certain style of community art, traveling around, connecting with like other community art organizations like that across Canada for a long time. So it made this like really big network places I was traveling. So like through that work, I got to spend summers like working in like, you know, Algoma region, like Mississauga First Nation area up there. I spent some time working in Nipissing with Anmatagzi First Nation and Anmatagzi Arts in Nipissing First Nation. Yeah, so I got like some really good travel opportunities through Jumblies for years, working with other companies that like to do this kind of like outdoor or like large scale community oriented work. So, you know, making things for teenagers to make as part of like a large outdoor spectacle show, or spending time doing like research within your community to figure out what kind of shows you want to do, making those activities. So all that kind of stuff, like that's what I do for a living. For a long time, I would just be like, oh, my art is just like people. I just wait for the people and then I figure out what to make. So it's interesting. I spent a lot of time doing that work there, but it's really transient. So it's hard to track like what happened, because it's really just an experience for the people who were there. I did a lot of training for a long time, this thing called Art Fair Essentials. So like teaching other people about extending their art practice into like community settings. I still do that kind of work on and off, like quite a bit. Like, yeah, it's kind of extended now into doing work in galleries and doing work with like more, I don't know, they want me to talk about certain topics or do even like arts research with organizations. I use all the same tools. So it's theater, but it wasn't necessarily making plays very often. It was like teaching and learning about making community art, working in community settings. So yeah, I've been working in community settings my whole life, right? So I already had a good skill set. And then when I was there, I think I spent a lot of time like making room for more Native artists to be there. So I spent a lot of my time like mentoring and bringing in Native artists from across Canada to like do more training there and become part of the projects. But yeah, I ran some really big projects there for a long time. The biggest one I think is the Talking Treaties project. So that's a beast of a project that's been going on since 2015. Yeah. So like now it's got some films. We've done some kind of like large collaborations with the Toronto Biennial of Art. The work that I usually do is at the like would take place at Fort York for a few years in a row. And then also at the Jumblies like drop-in place. So all of the craft, everything that we generated, we're all part of the like made with our community, all the members that would come in and do the programming. So it's like it's a real community art project. It took years to do. Like those piles of gifts you just saw were made by like probably 300 people. There's all my work is like that. It takes like a lot of hands. And then I bring the projects and we work in collaboration with like other Native organizations or groups I want to work with. So I teach at Center for Indigenous Theater sometimes. And so one of the projects we did like was called Dish Dances. It's in there somewhere, but it's like, it's a work I did with Center for Indigenous Theater students for the Toronto Biennial of Art. So making like experimental dance films, making education resources. So all my work is like kind of all over the place. But we end up with a lot of public facing things, a lot of workshops, a lot of really beautiful outcomes and come and go. And so, yeah, it's one of the ways I can get into the visual art world, I guess, too, like working in this kind of more like contemporary art settings also, like bringing community art practices to, yeah, more contemporary art settings. So it's, but it brings in all the skills, right? I'm like project managing my stuff. It's kind of still theater building ideas just for film. Yeah. Yeah. This was put up later on. The video was put up at like Fort York, outside Fort York for a long time. Last year for the 2 years ago for the biennial. And then I keep doing like presentations and workshops, and like I did Nuit Blanche this year, like a big outdoor presentation, and showed the films again. It's kind of like you make the material and then you build what you need to talk about after. Yeah.
And how it works. You land in the community, you make a cattle call, and you say, we start the project?
Well, I mean, I'm like really into partnerships. Like I'm like a whole, I have a whole bit, like, that's what another part of my job is really thinking about, yeah, creative partnerships and different places that I could do long-term projects with, like which organizations I want to work with that'll let me do my own work, but also use their facilities, use their people, try to like use some of their, you know, use what they have. So I'm like, I'm bringing my ideas to different companies, finding the partners to work with them, and then finding like, I say when I find the people, like they're often places where the people already are. So like go to Center for Indigenous Theater. I know there's a group of students there. I know they need a block of thing to do between this date and this date. So let's do it. Right. But I kind of keep my nose in a lot of places and then figure out the right partners to make things happen. That's like what I've been doing in Toronto this whole time. It's just like these little, how to be a multidisciplinary artist here is means you got to have your feet in a lot of places. Yeah.
In a sense, it reconnects you with the Turtle Island Theater experience because it was community-based productions. But usually, if I remember well, I may be wrong, you will tell me, but if I remember well, the Turtle Island were taking well-known musical or theatrical work and making it indigenous by producing it in Ganabogi, but the content was not in itself indigenous. So you have, in a sense, see that experience, and you have give it a more rooted way of doing it.
Yes and no. I think like I still work on other people's plays, and those are all still just other people's plays, right? Like. I think the canon, musical theater canon productions are like so important, right? I'm one of the only people I know that have had the experiences of playing so many roles over the years that are like really significant roles out there in the public, right? You're like, oh, I was in this musical, in this role. It means a lot for like theater people. And like, I think it's really significant that actually it was the only company that I knew of that, you know, we had so many experiences. We had so many productions back to back for a long time. I think it was, yeah, not to downplay any of the skill building and capacity building that those kind of like experiences have for Native kids at all, because it managed to work. You know, you still get the success of doing something from beginning to end. You learn about project planning. You learn about actually like budgeting stuff. You learn about trying to figure out, yeah, how to navigate groups of people who are coming and going too, right? Like, I remember I was helping to manage the summer camp for a long time. And even that kind of work, like getting people on a bus. I'm good at that, right? I'm good at leading a lot of people. I think the skill set that comes with, yeah, doing community art is applicable to so many different forms. And it's like, yeah, so what makes you, it's those little skill sets, say like this like art of hospitality, right? That's what I really learned there, how to have people from all different ages working together. Yeah. How to set a schedule. It's a stage managing thing there for such a long time. I think I just wanted to, I still love working on other people's productions. I love sinking my teeth into like a musical or working on something that feels like it has like a really good, strong design base already. Yeah. But I feel like for my own work, I was really inspired by Spider-Woman Theater in New York. I worked with them for a long time. You know, I was inspired, as I mentioned, by Matanzi in North Bay with Penny Cucci and Sid Bob up there. I was really inspired by the kind of people that were like, okay, you know what? Like, we do have a bunch of really interesting stories and we can make some really weird art. So a lot of my art is just for the purpose of me wanting to design something like really big or wacky, or, you know, I always say image first, right? So what I want to see outdoors really big, let's make that happen first. It's connected to it's often like history connected, or yeah, lately I spent a long time with that Talking Treaties project, like thinking about, yeah, what governance symbols need to be really big. Like, yeah, spending a lot of time figuring out what to make big and then how the skills to make it. That's what I got from that place for sure, from the theater. The skills to take anything, materials, and remake them into some nice outfits.
An indigenous artist, maybe it's not true no more, but I know for a long time the pressure was there to, you have to look indigenous in the way that the public thought what our peoples should look in their own mind. And it was always, I have seen many artists having to fight to establish their own contemporary vision that were breaking the stereotype image. And did you have to clash with that kind of demand?
I'd say no. I'm like, no, I'm from Ganawage. We're right next to Montreal. You know, if anything, I was like trying to, I'm 40. I was raised in a time period where like in, you know, clothes and expression and individuality were like paramount. The last time of, you know, like what you wore really mattered. So I guess like I've always been a big fashion, I guess kind of like alt fashion head my whole life. I never had any beef with that because I felt like I had so much access to the world just by being so close to Montreal. I actually had a lot of, let's say, counter that thought, right? I spent a lot of time avoiding art in Quebec because of the way that I felt they were like pandering around visual expression, right? Where I was like, oh, like I don't want to have to put on this thing that's a little bit outside of what I actually am. So I spent a lot of time like choosing projects that we played with some visual iconography for Yamataka-san Titan. I ended up like actually avoiding doing a lot of my time just doing, I guess, general Western kind of theater. But then, yeah, I think it's the governance ideas and those symbols and things like that that I now put forward, as opposed to what, like, I'm trying to find something a lot deeper. I'm trying to find something a lot more like personal and for me right now. Like, that's what's leading me to all this work around the patterns. I don't wear anything that identifies myself as Indigenous ever. Like, I'm not a big earring person, or like there's nothing on me that says, you know, whatever. So I wouldn't put it on for my work, you know? Like, it's just it might be because of doing theater in Ganawage. Like, I never felt like I had to. I felt like there was already so many other ways to express myself. You know, I felt like I could do any musical. I felt like I could do any time period. I was into researching costumes and fashion from everywhere, from the, you know, going back in history. I spent trying to, yeah, go through a bunch of different looks and of different ways of expressing myself. But I think also, yeah, working with Spider-Woman Theater, realizing the stories don't have to ever be about Native things, right? It's more just like, it's just that's a really, really big part of my work. But a lot of the work that I bring to Center for Indigenous Theater is really that, like thinking around, like, let's just get weird, right? Let's just make something really funky and let's like make some weird art. And we never talk about, we rarely talk about identity concepts. Like, I've been through the, like, catalog of like indigenous content building, you know, for the past couple of years, and I'm like, oh, it's been done, guys, let's do something else. And like, you could push people to make something that's fresher, like if you don't let them stick in different in like the holes of identity politics, of identity representation, or about, you know, we don't need to talk about, you know, wearing beads and feathers anymore. Like, it's like, it's been done, guys. Like, you know, the 17 plays and the 17 shows that are about that. Like, there's like, so it's that kind of thing. Like, I feel like because I love media, because I love looking at old stuff, like, kind of know what's already been said and done a little bit sometimes now. And it's really nice to be able to bring that attitude and bring a kind of new, fresh building approach. So I'm like, you don't gotta, let's just make shows. Once I do CIT, I'm like, let's just make shows. Let's just make whatever. Let's just get really weird. And who knows what we're going to talk about. But yeah.
Your mic is off, André.
Thank you, Alexandre. Last fall, I was in Quebec City for the book fair, Salon du Livre des Premières Nations. And it was interesting to see all those writers telling, you are indigenous and you write about what you want to write. You are not, let your inspiration go and don't put you in the task of being native. You are, so you do what you want and you express yourself. That's it. And I find it very refreshing because I remember in the 90s, it was not the speech. Now there is kind of a new context that is very positive, I think. There is some works you indicated to Alexandre you want to speak about. Maybe we can look at it.
Sure. Yeah.
Hey, Alexandre, mm-hmm. C'est quoi que tu nous montrais?
Oui, attends, visible. Montrer ça.
This show. So
this is important.
This is an outcome I did with, I was a research fellow, so the inaugural Indigenous research fellow at the Canadian Center for Architecture last year. So maybe about a year and a half ago, I started doing the research, looking at some of their maps, looking at some of the, pulling together some of the stories around the Dawson site in particular, pulling together some stories around urban archaeology and some of the pottery patterns that are under the city. So I've put together a little bit of like a reader, and I put together a visual installation in the windows that kind of just think of like some of the contemporary architectures that are around the city, and a kind of a cheeky game applying some of the pottery patterns that are around the city historically underground to some of those building faces. So I was doing that as a like a visual installation in the windows as a reader, as you see here in this book here, and that has a whole bunch of history, Indigenous history, a whole bunch of Indigenous place names for the area, for different places on the map. But it's really, really good experiment just as a way to, and now what part of it also is you could book workshops for them to be able to guide you through a physical like pattern copying and extension and design game using some of the patterns that are from under the ground here at the Dawson site, like near Peel and like kind of near Peel area. So Peel and Maisonneuve area. So it's an interesting project, but I think what's been more interesting, because it's up until September, right? Like it's extended until September. Feel free to go spend some time, make your way to that back room because it's hard to find. But once you're in there, like spend some time listening and everything. There's an audio interview that is also available that's called Carrying Our Bones. And it's a conversation with an urban archaeologist, Bazita Hande Cross-DeLille from Ganawage. And that's part of the audio that's happening in the place. But it's like all my work is like that, right? A mix of interview work, a mix of like physical and sewing work, and then a mix of like some history, lots of history and activities mixed in there. So it's a good time. It's a good place to spend like a good half an hour or like to book a school workshop while you still have time, because there are school and group visit workshops available to book. If you want to try some of the activities, that's all laid out, ready to roll. But also, yeah, some of it's online here. It's a good place to be. What we did with them with the CCA, which was kind of cool, was I was working with Mohawk Atlas. So I asked them, I asked the people at the CCA, they had this beautiful building. It's the Founders Salon at the CCA. And the Founders Salon, the founder is the guy who like founded the railroad that goes through all the reserves, right? Like the founders, so you'd be able to stand out and look at all his railroads from up there. So it's the shot. He's like, his old house there is the CCA. And I was like, so have you ever had a group of like Native scholars, academics, anybody in here? Like, if you want to do this research, like, have you ever actually hosted or invited anybody? And they're like, no, not really. So I was like, well, let's do it then. You want to learn about place names? You want to learn about layers here? I had a private gathering of some people from Ganawage, some linguists, some people from the Mohawk Atlas Project. And that's what we did. It threw a bunch of people together through my skills, some like, you know, basic Photoshop skills of looking at strata and where clay is and stuff under where the old rivers would have been, layered those on top of some place names. And man, the stuff you find out about the city, like there are place names in Mohawk for everywhere in the city. Like we have it all laid out. And there's also place names in all the other languages, right? For all these places. And I think like once we start doing all that layering game, that was our first meeting. We'll probably have a couple more eventually, but it's a really cool, just like the collaboration. Yeah, Mohawk Atlas. So we only put one or two more dots on the map. The one that's really cool is up there. It's called, what is it? It means there's clay around it. And it's a place that we found that has clay. It's like at the top, it's a little bit, probably a northern dot, a little bit higher up there. And it's a place that we found that Tukuntardu, I think it was called. And it literally means there's clay around it, right? But there's an old cemetery there. And that cemetery is like a, you know, so the stuff that we put together by having linguists in place, then you're like, oh, that's our clay source, right? The Kantaradu. It's like, that's where the clay would have came from for all the pottery, for all the patterns. It probably took a long time. So like the things we need to put together, like the kind of discoveries that I make through the kind of work that I'm doing, I feel like I'm an artist, I'm a theater person, but like, what I'm actually doing is kind of following Lee. And then when you put the right people in place or you ask the right people through these oral history projects, sometimes you get good information. But yeah, it's been really nice. Once I layered that one little map of the graphic onto that place. Yeah, you notice there's a clay bed around it. So it makes sense. Why is it called the Gardar? You know, makes a lot of sense. I've been doing that kind of work, I guess, in or around Toronto for a long time. So I have all of these processes. I'm going back and forth, kind of like carrying these ideas back and forth. I'm working on a project right now that's like now taking the same ideas, looking at the patterns that are in Toronto now, and then trying, you know, looking at that pattern work for two different projects as a curator for this mural project I'm working on, and then also as for some work that I'm doing around pattern literacy here with some artists that I'm doing as part of my work at University College at U of T right now. So it's a lot of work. It's been really cool. But and then also bringing some Wendat people from your guy, right? Finding all the Wendat people I know and bringing them to do work in Toronto. So like bringing them to like work on as advisors and other people, and then trying to find artists from Montreal. So right now we have a call out through Street Art Toronto that is actually inviting particularly Wendat artists to come to apply to Street Art Toronto for this project called the Tabor Hill Mural Underpass Project. So that's one of the ones that I'm curating right now. Yeah. So that's another whole other thing, but same thing, dealing with pottery patterns, right? Like, how do we now see them? What can we do with them? How do we become so familiar with like the legacy of what was here in 1300? You know, 1300 to 1500, it's like, yeah.
Are you telling us that you are also working on a reconciliation between Mohawk and Wendat through art?
Well, I mean, I think it's like, you know, that beef is over. I think, blown out of proportion. Because like the truth, like the same thing, right? We all learn from the same junky textbooks. And so I've rewritten a better textbook. That's what the Treaty for Torontonians is. That talked about alliances, that talked about like long-term relationships of giving each other stuff and keeping up the conversation between each other. And so you gotta talk the talk. You gotta walk it. You know, if you're gonna do it, you have to, you're gonna You have to actually do the projects that make the connections between communities. Another project I'm working on is with the Centaur Theater. It's like a play called Stone and Bone Spectacular. It's like a really wacky one. And that has interviews that I've done with people in Montreal, but it also ends up with like a cast of people that are from, yeah, I got like a Wendat cast. I got a cast of people that are, yeah, Mohawk and Wendat and Anishinaabe cast. Like definitely. Yeah, all kinds in that cast. But it's hard. I know. I found that many performers and design and set people in Montreal to do an English-speaking production of the Centaur next year. Yeah. About, you know, Montreal history, but through like a really wacky burlesque and vaudeville kind of lens.
And do you have already a title for the work?
It doesn't have any online presence yet. It's called Stone and Bone Spectacular. And we have a settled date, but it's like fall 2025. They're doing some renovations in the theater first. I want to use their fly system.
Hey, good. So keep us informed. We'll certainly spread the word when the show will be on in the brand new Centaur Theater. Also, about our old speech that means conflict, is exactly around the pattern of the potteries found in Montreal. Many archaeologists, and mainly, I should say, archaeologists, are telling this is not Mohawk because the design is not the same than the one of the we find in New York or New Jersey, where the Mohawk people of the Flint come from. So they were another nation, completely different than the Mohawk. And this is also a way for the politician to say to our friend in Ganawagi, this is not your territory. So I suppose
I feel
you
like
have to meet that kind of resistance somewhere.
I feel like I've, in a way, like after doing all the research for these projects, you kind of, for me, I'll tell you it in the fastest way. This is my, what happened? Okay. So the island, who was on the island were people that were really important politically, connected to all the nations that were around. They were somewhat related to all, you know, between the Wendat, between the Mohawk. They were, you know, they were unique in that they were politically between all of those locations. But when those people, when the French people got to the area, those people moved out with the Wendat. They moved down into Mohawk territory and they moved out toward Belleville, like toward Kingston area. And so they stayed away for like maybe about 100, 150 years or so. Like, well, the French started moving in around the area. When the French started opening up those missions again, right? They went up to Kitiganzibi. They went up to like all different places. They kind of like spread out and moved because you could see the patterns on their pottery. Social network analysis, you could see where the patterns went now, right? You could see 30% of the patterns went down to here, 70% went here, right? But then you hear about who comes back to Ganawagi, to the missions that's south of the island, right? Like the Old Oneida mission, to the one that's out, like to all the missions around. They're people from all those same nations that already feel like they have a stake in that area, right? So I like this idea. There's like some archaeologists that are like, the people that came back to those missions and the people that came back to the mountain, it was like you're feeling like you're coming home. Like it's only, they've only been gone for so long and they've lived amongst all those other nations. So the truth is, yes, both of those things, all of those things, they moved in with all the other nations. Right? And then they all came, a lot of people came back. And so I truly think like when we say who's in Ganawagi, like Ganawagi was built of so many nations. It wasn't just Mohawk people, right? Ganawagi was Oneida, Ganawagi was Nipissing people, Ganawagi were people that now live in Kitiganzibi. Doesn't, you know, so many families from all over the place moved back there. And like, why? Why did we all want to come back? Not just to be with the French, it was to be back in the territory that we already loved. Like, right? To be back on the mountain. So I do think a lot about like the way we're thinking of that narrative kind of like takes away all of the social relationships that are happening in that time period. It takes away the reality that it was a summer village, right? The island was a summer place often. You would move onto the island and leave. So that whole like narrative just needs like a layer of contemporary research, once you throw that all in, it's like, man, we can just, I feel like it's wacky. Like I was at the meetings at Pointe au Calier before, and I was like, why do I feel like I'm the only one doing this research? Well, they're doing the same research at the same time. I feel like we haven't done or publicized or actually cleared up like the research with Indigenous scholars on the case, right? Publicly for a really long time. And so I guess my role as an artist, which I started to take on just recently, is to be like, yeah, like the intermediator, like who is in between the people, the patterns, the recognition of like seeing, because we can still see those patterns in Wendat patterns. We can see them in Mohawk patterns. We can see them in Seneca patterns, because some people from, like after doing my research in Toronto, I'm like, there are Saint, whatever they call St. Lawrence, Iroquoian patterns, Iroquoian type patterns. They just seem like angle, right? Angles with lines, right? Dirty underlying pattern, or like these familiar patterns. They travel all the way to Toronto during like the, you know, the 1560s, during this, they're in Toronto. So there's all this, like, there's people traveling all up and down the St. Lawrence. And so when we're thinking about like, yeah, I like thinking about what the political role of the people that would have lived on the island would have been as mediators, and people who would have been so familiar with Mohawk customs, because that was the top. You see just like where the rivers go, right? That's territorial boundaries. It makes sense that Montreal is a confluence of people. So I just try to think a lot about, like, you know, right from the Ottawa River coming down, all those people. It's like there's other ways to look at relationships, but also like it's a real art game. It's an art game now. It's me looking at it as an artist now, being able to make like just visual connections between patterns, be able to say, oh, okay, in this time period, they were here. They moved over here and over here and over here. Like, I love that now. You know, that's one of my favorite parts of the conversation. And so bringing that kind of thing to the public is my game this year through all these different collaborations I'm doing.
Yeah, I remember in the 90s when we had this project to commemorate the signature of the Great Peace of Montreal of 1701. I was speaking about it and they were telling me, what are you speaking about? A peace in Montreal? What's that? Nobody knew about it. But the scholar who made the research, Gilles Lavard, the book about the Great Peace, wrote exactly this. It has been erased from memory because it gives, when you know how big it was, you know that it has been a treaty built by the indigenous diplomacy. And they bring the King of France through his ambassador in Canada to sing with indigenous nations and recognizing by the fact itself the sovereignty of those nations. And that's why it has never been told as it was, as it has happened in that time.
You know, it was cool about that.
Yeah, it's interesting to see
where everybody gathered, because people came all the way from Sault Ste. Marie, right? Like all the way here for that. And so they all slept on the south shore in what was Gunawagi at the time. Everyone just imagine that many boats all at once coming to the shore of Montreal, because they apparently all moved at once to Montreal, and then they all come out and they all come for the meeting. And when they get there, the guy hands out the Mont Magny, whatever, he hands out that big dish of meat. And it's funny because it's like, it's using our governance structures, right? It's using handing out a common dish, because he knows that between our nations, just before that, we did the dish with one spoon, right? We agreed, we extended, that's like that wampum belt happened just years before. So like, just thinking about like the kind of, you know, it's kind of like, yeah, not just then, but it's like, Montreal is super pivotal. There's a whole couple pages of my book about the Great Peace of Montreal, because I got obsessed with the narratives and the narratives around how we took, because there's stories and oral history pieces in there around like people returning prisoners, but they would be like, this, you know, these people want to bring some prisoners back, but those prisoners are like, no, we don't want to go. So we're only going to return 7 of the 12, because the rest of them are just going to stay where they are because they have families now. You know, you kind of like you see even through the French documentation, you can see what's actually happening between our communities. And so I like to, like, all of these documents, like the historical layer is always part of the, that's why I'm like, I research more than I do the art these days.
That's very special. The eating in the same dish in those times was meaning living in peace.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, it was, and this was exactly how our ancestors eat, with a dish in the middle of the place and everybody taking his food from it. And it's interesting also in Meshtuyats, the community I am member, there is a big family called the Gil family. And their ancestors were English. They were taken prisoners by Abenaki. And when it was later on exchange between the English and the indigenous nations, the two guilds ancestors told, no, we don't want to go back to the English community. We are Abenaki now. And their name has stayed with us since that time. That's really interesting. And that's how we can see that the clear-cut border that some narrative gives to identity, nations, territory, are not that clear. So I think your work is very important because it, in a sense, it re-establish, even if it's not traditional, in a sense, it brings back the real tradition, no?
Yeah, no, I know. That's the game, right? Fill them with information. And then big visuals and then lots of sound. Yeah.
So I understand that the work with the Center of Architecture is going on. We can see the visibly Iroquois right now. This is on at the center, so we can encourage people to go and see the show at the CCA.
Yeah, and one until September.
Okay, and after that, how this project will evolve?
This is the fellowship is meant to bring in more Native artists that will like build their own work. So there's currently a cohort of two Native artists that are like developing new installations and work, and yeah, that's the idea.
André, ton micro.
Thank you. Is there another work you want to speak?
Not really. I mean, come by, and if anyone's in Montreal, if anyone's in Toronto, wants to take a trip to Toronto, I'm doing an outcome as part of this Barker Farley Distinguished Fellowship that I have. And my outcome is going to be on Mother's Day, actually, on May 12th from 2 to 4 o'clock. And it's an interdisciplinary exploration of some of the pottery patterns and layers of kind of habitation that have been in the city for the past couple of years with one artist is Monique Mojica, the movement and experimental creation artist. Another artist is Olivia Short. She's an experimental kind of like vocalist, saxophone player and music maker. And another artist is named Jay Havens. So Jay Havens is a public artist and theater and set designer. So we'll be working together to think about pottery patterns and how do we remember them, right? Like how do we embody? What do we learn about? How do we remember them? And exactly that, like how do we make those connections between so that we can make for our own, you know, get some sense of them, learn them in a kind of new way. Yeah. And I'll be performing a piece that I made as part of that. It's actually called Montreal 1500. And it's about the pottery patterns that are found at the Dawson site. So I took those patterns and kind of did some performance interpretations of them using kind of like shared Iroquoian vocables that are between Haudenosaunee vocables and Wendat vocables. So the sounds that are in our songs, and applied them to the music, applied them to the patterns as though they're music, played and read through them. So I have this kind of like almost stomp dance sounding experimental vocal track that goes along with a like a stage performance about pottery pattern making. So yeah, come see. That's the only thing that I have coming up, and keep your eye out for the fall of 2025 for the Stone and Bone Spectacular at the Centaur.
Perfect. Send us all the information. We will spread the word through our social networks. And wow, it was a really great moment to have you with us for this podcast. We can do it again later when the play will come out at the Centaur. And thank you very much. Oona, it was really fantastic to have you with us today. Have you something to add, or Alexandre?
No, I think I'm good for me. It was really interesting. And I hope we can see each other someday. No?
Yeah, we have some puppets in Montreal too, made by indigenous artists. So maybe we can organize there another meeting of all the puppets. Okay, thank you very much.
Me, let's bye bye.
Okay, bye, Anagi.